the four aspects of the Divine Mother. That is the subject which is part of the book, The Mother. And there is a little bit of history of the book. We all probably are aware of it. But Shobindo at one point says, all my work were waiting for the mother to come. Because he says that before the mother's coming, I could complete my own sadhana. But it could not be given to the world and humanity. It is an extremely difficult yoga. One should know that in terms of its results, in terms of its goal which it pursues. But if we look at the method, now we can say the method is the easiest of all. Sri Aurobindo's own words. In terms of goal, to divinize human life on earth is something which has not been conceived. At best, we have imagined a happy life, a harmonious life, a sattvic life, sattvic society, a life where we are free from, you know, illness and quarrels, Ramrajya, that's how we have conceived. But a life where as a social group, not just individuals, but as a society, one is free of ignorance, what that society will be, where there is no confusion, no misunderstanding. One is conscious of the divine when one connects with others who are also conscious of the divine. And not only conscious of the divine deep within, but in the speech is a natural movement of truth. Heart is a receptacle of divine love and sweetness. Life is a flow of the divine energy. What that life would be, we can only remotely imagine. It's described in Savitri in Book 3, Canto 3, House of the Spirit and the New Creation. There will be obviously be no misunderstanding, no quarrel, no need for doctors, policemen and lawyers and all this won't be needed, because there won't be any of these things. Even the body will remember God, as he says. So Sri Aurobindo was given a program for his sadhana and he was moving along those lines. So he is the first prototype of the supramental being. So as he was moving along the sadhana, it's all there in records of yoga. He was given a whole program for the limbs of sadhana, the 10 limbs of sadhana. And he started experiencing and realizing. And among them was the various siddhis in the very body, not just lagima, anima, mahima, garima. They are the vital siddhis in the course of ascension. But many other things which Sri Aurobindo speaks of in records of yoga, which are needed for the transformation of earthly life. And this was a goal with which he had come. So as he went along and started having all those experiences, right from Trikal Drishti to many other things, so he could see that the amount of tapasya that is needed. Human beings, what do we actually seek? We seek celebrations, festivals, we seek religion as a comfort zone, we seek God for fear or favor, and we seek ideologies, we love to discuss philosophies, but the actual change, and that to a change where the very human being will change into something very different, like ape to man, that is something we don't even conceive of. So we can imagine the world of Sri Aurobindo in which he is there. And so he was waiting for the mother to come. Mother was approaching the same thing, but same goal, but in a different way. If we read through mother's prayers and meditation, we will see that she is going to the same goal, absolutely. But she is doing it purely through the way of the heart, the psychic, and then she climbs further. All the experiences of Sri Aurobindo are there in prayers and meditation. But Sri Aurobindo's, we can see the tapasya. There is, of course, surrender, samarpan, all that is there, but primarily it is centered around tapasya. And when we read the mother's prayers and meditation, it's primarily, you know, centered around surrender. So, and there is a reason why each had to follow a different curve, but that need not be the issue right now. So when the mother comes and she comes finally, definitively, and she takes up the yoga. She is born free. Shubhendu said she is born free. Nobody can tell her, please look after, please organize the ashram life. Though Shubhendu has realized, she has realized that he is the Lord. And he knows she is the mother. But it's not like, see, now it's very nice you have come, please start organizing. There are people coming around. And then tell the disciples, get me things because we need to build a big ashram. No, it had to wait for the spontaneous evolutionary impulsion. And that's where we see when Shubhendu completes his own yoga, because this was a prerequisite before he would take disciples. So in 1926, 24th November, Shubhendu completes his own yoga, Yoga Siddhi. That's what the Siddhi Divas is about. Many things, but one of them is that his own yoga is completed. And one of the, not only Shri Krishna fused with him, but if you see that he had started the yoga practice, noting in his diary from 1909 onwards, and the last entry is 1927, because after the Siddhi, there is no further need. And then the Siddhi that he has received, how to give it to humanity which is around, because otherwise it will be an isolated Siddhi which makes no meaning. So he puts on hold the physical transformation, because then there will be no connection left between Shubhendu and the mother and the rest of humanity. Because it's already a different being. We are all, as we say, that we may be very different in our inner consciousness, but well, we have a common endowment, and that is a human body. It's the same way, built same way. So he sacrificed that, refused that to go ahead himself, because he wanted the humanity to progress simultaneously. And in that, the mother at some point agreed. Agreed because it came from her that yes, now is the time and we should go ahead for this. So that is 24th November 1926. Several things happened. The mother took charge of the ashram. Formally, we may say that the ashram was born in 24th November 1926. The mother had created a overmind creation, the creation of the gods, which she dissolved, because Shubhendu wanted perfect perfection, not another very great religion where people worship and people claim him as the highest of highest religion ever born. He didn't want that. He wanted that this time we want a definite victory and the definite change. No more pralayas. So when that happened, now Shubhendu started engaging in the work of bringing the supramental force, supramental consciousness to earth. Individually, he was experiencing all these things. But now he wants for the earth. So we see that in Savitri also, there comes a time where he says, I want for the whole earth. And then that is only possible if mother consents, because it's not enough that the force comes down. Man, as I said, hardly wants anything other than roti, kapda, makan, bibi, bachcha, dukan. This is the limit of human consciousness. Or some, as we say, matha tek lena, doing some little bit of, you know, morning prayers. This is what man in the average is seeking. So someone has to prepare. He is busy with the cosmic dimension of the work of bringing the supramental down to earth, but someone has to prepare humanity. And who would do that? And there we have that the mother agreed. And the mother took this part. So they, between them, we see that they had their one, but they had their very well clear-cut, well-defined roles. They could easily do either of them. So Shubhendu would work on the cosmic dimension of bringing the supermind. Then on each plane has to accept. The plane of the gods will not, supposing it doesn't accept. So how will it come right into matter? So all that we see in Shubhendu's conversation, his work was of a larger cosmic dimension of bringing the supermind right into the earth matter. But preparing humanity to receive it, the mother took up. So therefore, the mother was placed in the front as the guide of the yoga. That's why Shubhendu says that if you want to do this yoga, you have to go through the mother. Shubhendu is working on a very large scale, and she has to take care of the It's like the prime minister and the home minister. So somebody has to manage humanity, which is far from ready. So if the that consciousness comes down and man cannot receive it, he will probably break down. So the mother takes charge. Now with the mother coming to the forefront, now we see that by then Sri Aurobindo has written so much, including the Arya and pre-Pondicherry days. The first book that comes out is The Mother. That's 1928. And the first chapter is the first message. After that, the Darshan Day is started. First Darshan Day we see on 21st February 1927. Because now Sri Aurobindo has completely embodied the divine. And therefore the Darshan has a meaning. He didn't want it just to be a ritual, a formality, or people going and doing pranam like traditionally we have that. So the Darshan meant the Darshan of the Lord, nothing else, nothing less. And people describe how their life changed just a few seconds of being in that presence. And so the mother would, Sri Aurobindo would sit on the couch and the mother would sit on a stool to the right. It actually, the first Darshan technically was 24th November 1926 itself. But it was not regarded as a Darshan day. So on 21st February, Sri Aurobindo and the mother gave the first Darshan. And on that day, a message was given for all, and that is the first chapter of The Mother. So that is how the message was given, that look here, she is the one. This was his way of saying she is the one who is going to take charge of everybody. And then he would keep reminding it, as disciples will approach him, he would say, go to the mother, because that was how the whole thing proceeded. So we'll see that he speaks about the fixed and unfailing call from below and the grace of the Divine Mother which responds from above. So between these two now the work is going on. So the whole individual yoga was given to Mother. So this was chapter one. Then there was a disciple called Motilal Mehta. He asked from Gujarat, so he asked some more things about the yoga, and Sri Aurobindo wrote a number of things. But at the end he added some instructions about the yoga, and that becomes the chapter 2 of the book, The Mother. And then we have another disciple called Poonam Chand Saha. He was also collecting money on behalf of Sri Aurobindo. So to him, chapter 3rd, 4th and 5th practically are written for him, because when you go for money, when you work for the mother, and then you know her protection and grace, chapter 3, a marvelous chapter. So that's how chapter 3, 4 and 5th were given. By then, Sri Aurobindo had already decided to bring out a book. But the book would be incomplete without what today is chapter 6. So chapter 6, Sri Aurobindo added on himself, by himself. And then all the 6 chapters went together as a book. They were distributed in April 1928, though it was published somewhere in January 1928. And then it was given as, you know, what is the gospel of the mother, if you want to use a word. Sri Aurobindo himself said, people think it is a work of philosophy and practical advice, but it is not so. It is a very deep and profound work. So what you were mentioning. So it has many depths, layers after layers, but most importantly, it is a grand disclosure of the mother. Which the mother? Because of course, there is so much has been written about glory of the Divine Mother in our own tantras and other, you know, shastras. So, but here the Divine Mother was embodied as the human avatar, which makes it very, very special. So people asked him that all this that you are writing is with reference to the Divine Mother, our mother. He would say yes, because she is embodying the two vaster ways of her existence. So already there is the transcendent mother and the universal mother and the individual mother. It's not a new discovery of Sri Aurobindo. It's there. Transcendent, she is the one who inspires the supreme to create. We have that description both in Rig Vedas and the Tantras, that the Divine Mother literally inspires. And then there is the urge to create. So she is the transcendent. So at her inspiration, the creator begins to create, otherwise he is no more, he is not yet the creator. He is sitting in a shav-like state. All possibilities, but nothing which has started. So She is the transcendent mother who is far beyond all. Even the supreme is compelled. Look here. Supreme in that state of non-being. She moves him and he is moved. So it is that power. Whatever she says, supreme grants. That's how Sri Aurobindo says in chapter 3. That what she has said, the supreme is compelled to grant. Because she is the original transcendent power. So that's how the transcendent mother. But then she is not only urging the supreme to create. Now supreme brings out of himself all the, she is his shakti. She has only taken a sanction. Okay. She is inspired and he says yes. Then she has to create. So she creates countless systems of worlds and countless skies, stars, space-time dimensions, etc., etc. And she becomes Bhuvana Bhuvaneshwari. She is the mother of the worlds, the world mother. So world mother is not just our world mother, our world, but all the system of worlds. She becomes Tripura Sundari, the beauty that is unparalleled. So she creates and creates. Now she is infinite Shakti. Can there be a limit to her creation? There can be no limit. That's why, you know, you may explore time, space, whatever. You will never reach the end. Because they are also infinite at the end of the... It's limited, but they are expanding into a limitless state. So she creates and she goes on creating and she continues to create. Even when the whole thing is withdrawn back, recoils back, because creation beyond a point is unable to take that power. So that is pralaya. Where does it enter? It enters into the heart of the Lord. It doesn't vanish anywhere. That we have the story in Devi Bhagavat, Markandeya Puran. And then she creates again. Why? Because there is a purpose. What is the original purpose? Original purpose is that every element of creation should reveal something of the Lord, manifest the Lord. So at a material level, it's very easy. So you have mountains representing high climbing aspiration, tapasya. The Lord is engaged in tapasya. Solid strength, and from his heart flows all the rivers, the Lord's love flowing as river, as life. So if we look at material creation, we can say that, you know, everything reveals something of the Lord, some quality. In the animal world also we'll see, you know, lion represents quiet power, serpent represents evolution. He is on a fast track and then suddenly he begins to fly as a bird. Birds, flowers, they all represent something. But ultimately with the coming of man, there should be a complete manifestation of the divine who is within. Not just as one quality here and there hidden which the person has to read through. But even the form must be such that it spontaneously reveals. So Project Man is the most difficult project because here now individuality is formed. So she starts working on individuals. So within the individual also, she becomes the one who shapes the individual and humanity toward that great manifestation. So this is also we see in Kathopanishad, for example, when Nachiketa says, I want to know the secret of immortality. And one of the things that Yama says is that in the heart there is Aditi. This is what thou seekest. The mother of the gods is also seated in the heart. And all the gods and goddesses reside as they will understand what I am going to say, zip while. All as possibility and potential, like in a seed is enclosed the entire tree. So in the human soul, all of them are embedded as forces and powers. This has been achieved within the human soul. Now it has to outflower. Over millenniums, there is the outflowering in the form of vibhutis, in the form of sometimes partial incarnation. For example, Joan of Arc, or Rani Lakshmibai, or Shivaji, they are all vibhutis of the Divine Mother. Ma Bhavani, Shakti, and you can see them, or Maheshwari, some of these great queens, wise queens, how they have governed the kingdom in Egypt, one of mother's own incarnation, Hatshepsut, or in Russia, Queen Catherine I, till date people You know, much of the fight, St. Petersburg and some places in Ukraine which are dear to them. So they are not ready to compromise those parts. So because Catherine I gave a game-changing plan for Russia during those days. So in India we have, you know, if you go to far back times, Draupadi changed the entire, you know, birth of India as Aryavart is thanks to Draupadi and Shri Krishna. But Shri Krishna is the one who, you know, inspires the main protagonist and makes sure that the events lead to the war. But Draupadi is the one who holds them together. So they have Helen of Troy. So she has been as Maheshwari, these as wisdom, as power in Joan of Arc. Sometimes she has manifested only as a being of love. See, when we look at Radha, being of love. And then sometimes as a great organizer. So we see that also in some queens, some of them have organized. They say that, you know, along with Julius Caesar, how Cleopatra, she was a great organizer. So most of the time they have stood behind, because women by nature, feminine, doesn't go to the forefront and proclaim things. So they have been shaping the human mind and the human vessel. Actually, if we look at the history of the world, we can note it purely from the feminine figures. We'll see how some figures have been outstanding. What would be Shivaji without Ramdas, but what would be Shivaji without Jijabai Mata? You see that how she has prepared him for that great war. What would be Maharana Pratap without the great sacrifice done by the great Kshatrani, who allows the Dhaya to take and sacrifices her own life? What would be the entire glory of, you know, Rajputana without the sacrifice of Padmavati, and you know that we are not compromising with regard to the nation. So they have done their work and they have inspired generations. Now the time has come, as Shobhindra and the mother says, that look here, now the time has come that man can be shaped into this perfect vessel. So, but before that, first, some of these powers of the mother that have been laboring and working upon earth, we have to take their work to completion. They have to complete the work. They have been doing it, laboring, but always there is something left. And for that, the four powers which have been in the forefront, they must come together and harmonize. Otherwise, we have either a very wise person or a very strong person. But they have to come together and create a kind of harmony in the sadhak before the supramental Mahashakti can act. And to take one more example where four aspects directly come, if you want to see a comparison of the four aspects, then it's there in the Purushukta, where from the forehead of the Purusha came Brahmins. Of course, very much misunderstood. Doesn't matter. God is always misunderstood. So, embodying wisdom. From the Vakshasthal, chest and the hands, came the Kshatriyas, power. And from the belly and the Janga, the thighs and the belly, came the Vaishya, who would produce and harmonize, create beauty. That is the original sense of the Vaishya. Vaishya is not just a money-making person. He has to create things of beauty materially. And he harmonizes. How does he do? He is the one who knits the world in the beginning. Kshatriya is busy conquering. But who actually knits is the Vaishya. He goes all around. See, the Vaishya has played a very important role. And that's a whole story. They would go from one place to another. Bring the details of that. Sometimes they would act as a spy. And sometimes in a bad way, like Prithviraj Chauhan, we know, you know. So that's the Vaishya aspect. And then somebody has to manifest it in most material terms. And that is the Shudra. To Shudra's lot, which is from the feet, was given the hard work of the soil. Now we take a very simple example. I conceive a beautiful place. Let's say this place should come up beautifully. Then what is the next step? Conception is not enough. I may have the knowledge on paper. I may even say, ki, look here, so much money will be required to some extent. And I have this in mind that a beautiful center must come up in Gurugram. Then somebody has to bring in the force, the power, the challenges. Somebody has to take those challenges head on. And then someone has to bring the resources, bring them together, harmonize people who would come and they would act together in a state of harmony. Otherwise you can't have, it will be a one-man show. And that's not how creation will be. So then that is the Vaishya part. Money has to come, resources has to come, every people has to come. It's an inner harmony has to start expressing. And then finally, there is the beauty begins to express itself in outer terms. So that's how always these four have, even in making of a pot, you start with an idea, then you need some force of whatever. If you have to make a pot, at least you can't be sleeping and making a pot. And then you have to bring in the resources, mutti, all these things have to come. And then the hands have to carve it into a beautiful shape. So these are the four. They are there in the Purushukta. And while casteism is bad because it was based on birth, but its deeper principle was not birth. It was the inner swabhav and swadharma. Based on that, each one, there was a warrior type, there was a man of knowledge, there was a man who would naturally had a flair for creating and producing, and there were those who had skills in the hand. Now what is happening is that the new being must have all of them together. So the old system has been broken. It's like you have different parts. Car's body is made somewhere, engine is made somewhere, chassis is made somewhere, petrol tank is made somewhere, but it is assembled. So this experiment of nature is now over. Now it is entering into assembling all these. So we have a new type of humanity which will embody all the Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra together. So in the first chapter we have a hint of that. So he speaks about the illumined disciple, page 7 in this volume, yeah. See, now all the four aspects come together in a nutshell. First time Sri Aurobindo mentions them in Synthesis of Yoga, in the chapter on Faith and the Divine Shakti. That's where he speaks about the four aspects. Because they correspond to the original impulse of creation, the original way that society was organized. As I said, these four main activities, and they correspond to four aspects of human being: mind, knowledge, heart, and the strength aspects, the chest, the heart, and then of course the activity of production and business and dealings, and the physical labor. So always everywhere people have this, the knowledge based people, what are they called, professionals. Then you have the politicians and the administrators and the warriors. Everywhere we have this. And then there are the industrialists and the business people, and then we have the worker or the labor force. Because this is a truth, you may call it by whatever name, but now a new being has to come. That's where the magic lies. So what is this new being? He passingly describes page 7, but we'll start the sentence on page 6, the last sentence. A glad and strong and helpful submission is demanded to the working of the divine force. This is where the Gita ends. Gita speaks of Swadharma, which we have talked about. But what does it say in the end? Sarva dharman parityaja mamekam sharanam raja. Now, I have told you all this, Arjun. You are a Kshatriya. So if you consider the Swadharma, you are meant to fight the battle. But I am telling you a greater secret. Even if you were not a Kshatriya, you just surrender yourself completely and do the divine bidding. So that's where Shurvindo begins, surrender as the beginning. So what happens as a result? The obedience of the illumined disciple of the truth, the Brahmin, illumined disciple of the truth, not a book knower Brahmin, that he has read lot of books, can give lot of lectures and write lot of books, so therefore he is illumined. No, he is a disciple of truth, seeker of truth, and therefore he is illumined. Of the inner warrior who fights against obscurity and falsehood. So he must embody simultaneously the Kshatriya Bhav and then of the faithful servant of the divine. The other two come in that. The one who is doing things for the sake of the divine, servant of the divine. So Shudra is the servant, but whose servant? You have to become the Bhava of servant must become. In Shudra, both Prema and Kama come. So he must become a servant of the Lord. There is a little story of somebody who was lifting utensils in the dining room and going, and someone jokingly remarked or mockingly remarked, "Kuli, hey Kuli." He says, "Her Kuli." We know Hercules is a great hero who did the 7 impossible tasks. But her, Divine Mother's Kuli. So this is the new type which is coming, and nature is compelling people to become that, you know. So she is molding us. So can we collaborate in the molding? That's where the 4 aspects come. How we can collaborate? First, he gives a little description of these powers and personalities, how they work in the human system, what is their function, and then he gives how we can collaborate. So now we are on page 37. First, he briefly summarizes 4 great aspects of the mother. 4 of her leading powers and personalities have stood in front in her guidance of this universe. So there are many others, but these have stood in front and in her dealings with the terrestrial play. One is her personality of calm, wideness and comprehending wisdom and tranquil benignity and inexhaustible compassion and sovereign and surpassing majesty and all-ruling greatness. She is very wide and therefore she is compassionate because she understands everybody and everything. She doesn't condemn anybody. But with each one she deals according to their nature and according to what is needed. But always with compassion. Who can be compassionate? Only a person who is very wide. And only a person who has such an intimate knowledge of everyone that knows. Action is okay, but ye intention ye hai. Ordinarily, we cannot. So Maheshwari understands that part. Another embodies her power of splendid strength and irresistible passion, her warrior mood, her overwhelming will, her impetuous swiftness and world-shaking force. So first is the mind knowledge, will. Yesterday we were talking about will must embody that power. Not a weak will, because otherwise we may have nice thoughts but nothing we can do if the will is weak. So requirement of will. A third is vivid and sweet and wonderful with her deep secret of beauty and harmony and fine rhythm, her intricate and subtle opulence, her compelling attraction and captivating grace. Without that, there is no joy, there is no delight. So she brings that harmony which makes even the most ordinary design look wonderful. The original purpose of creation is to multiply delight. So she achieves that. And finally, the fourth is equipped with her close and profound capacity of intimate knowledge and careful, flawless work and quiet and exact perfection in all things. Wisdom, strength, harmony, perfection are their several attributes, and it is these powers that they bring with them into the world, manifest in a human disguise in their vibhutis and shall found in the divine degree of their ascension in those who can open their earthly nature to the direct and living influence of the Mother. To the four we give the four great names, Maheshwari, Mahakali, Mahalakshmi, Mahasaraswati. Now there is a sequence in their workings. So the sequence is very simple. First is Maheshwari. Let's take the universe. Universe starts with a conception. Conception is Ekoham Bahushya. The large lines, several order of worlds. Maheshwari comes first. Or you have to make a place, anything. Maheshwari will come first. Knowledge. Then power. This we have seen. Then Mahalakshmi comes and starts, you know, making that which has been created by combination of knowledge and power look beautiful. And who will come at the end? Mahasaraswati. She will add that right touch, that little bit which is missing, and make it so wonderful. That little touch that comes with Mahasaraswati, which makes it. And that's why the age which we are just crossing over, Kaliyug, was the age of Mahasaraswati. So we, in that age, you have to, it's also there in the four ages, the age of the knowledgeable person, Satyug, then the age of the warriors, then the age of the Vaishya, and then the age of the worker. That's how the four ages also, and we can see that in the movements which come up during that period. If you look at the age of the Vaishya, what lovely things, beautiful things that were created. But then, what is the workforce with the coming of the worker or the Shudra element in creation? You have been able to achieve most minute perfection, like you have to have a screw for anything. It must be just the right size, every little engraving. It's not about beauty. Now here it's about perfection. Where just that little touch which makes it so complete, much of what we are using today is thanks to the Shudra. Of course, the knowledge is there behind. But if he were not to carve, if we see even the big rods when they are straightened because they have to be put inside as columns, it's an art. It requires force, it requires labor. So all these four, Mahasaraswati comes in the end. And the same with sadhana. First the knowledge aspect opens up. So when the knowledge aspect opens up, one says, ah, wonderful. The mind suddenly opens to something wide, something, a calm begins to come inside the mind because you begin to see things differently. Then comes the impetus. Ah, this is what we have to do. And people, you know, start the practice in real earnest. But then comes Mahalakshmi, you are not doing it alone. There is the world, there is, people are around, everything. So the Mahalakshmi, love begins to enter the heart, is the crown. And then comes the Shudra, where one is minute perfection of Mahasaraswati, small little defects. Nothing will escape her attention. You feel, ah, I have become a sadhak, I have love for Mother, and you know, wisdom has begun to pour in. At the same time, I am ready to do Mother's work. Mahasaraswati will come and show us, hold on, wait. Have you noticed that little dark spot on your shirt? No, I didn't notice. You have to become Mother's child. Nothing should be there which is flawed. Everything should be flawless and perfect. So Mahasaraswati is the last one who comes. Shubhendu describes her as the youngest. But until she comes and gives her certificate, till then, it is still going on, labor is going on. She has to do all the intricate details, plumbing, electrical connection. You can make a beautiful building, but without these things, it will have no meaning. So these are the four aspects. Now we can just quickly read, whole thing is very long, so I'll just read what we have to do, our take home points, to really allow her action within us, so that, you know, we can grow at least into something that she wants to make us. So how to this, I also use this as understanding that, you know, the new way of puja. So the highest puja is known as manasik puja. You don't have anything external, you are not offering flowers. But of all these manasik puja is still where you are offering in the mind. But here it takes it to another level. If you really want to worship God, do what the God wants you to do. What is the point of worshipping Durga and then acting cowardly in a Mahishasur way? So this is where the whole thing comes, catch. That translate it into real life practice. That is the ultimate worship. What is dear to Rama? Okay, taking his name is fine. But doing service, living life according to the great truths that he stood for and embodied, isn't that much greater? I mean, the answer is obvious. It's not either or. But which is greater? To live life according to the great truths that they stand for. So what does Maheshwari stand for? What we should do to be able to embody and become her instrument. So in each of these, toward the end, he will tell us. So in her, what is her nature, which we have to grow into? Page 40. Those are the qualities we have to embody. Page 40. Equal. Maheshwari doesn't talk of big and low and high and equal in all circumstances. See, a seeker of true knowledge has to be like that. Patient. Can I seek knowledge if I am impatient? There are people who have read the mother 40 times. They couldn't understand and they read and reread and reread. What patience to pursue knowledge, because she is like that, and equal, patient and unalterable in her will. She deals with men according to their nature. So we have to have that kind of psychological understanding of life, that everybody is not the same. You don't deal with a child in the same way as you deal with an adult, and different human natures are different. So those who mind is not only wide but plastic, not rigid and narrow, they are the children of Maheshwari, because they are, they are ready to adapt their understanding to the work that is required. And then she gives to each one according to what they need or demand. Last three lines on page 40. To the wise she gives a greater and more luminous wisdom. Those that have vision she admits to her counsels. On the hostile she imposes the consequence of their hostility. The ignorant and foolish she leads according to their blindness. So this is also important, that we should be the standardizing things. That's not how Maheshwari works. There must be a felt need, as what we were discussing, you know, teaching to the corporate sector profound secrets of yoga because they can pay money. This doesn't work. It's not supposed to be like that. Maheshwari will not like it. She will give the wisdom only if you are a seeker. That's why in Shobindra's yoga there is nothing like converting and advertisement, nothing like that. It's not meant to be done. If you are not a seeker, it will disturb the balance of things. You will not understand. In all likelihood, they will misunderstand and start distributing Shobindra's books and hold quiz competitions in the name of celebrating Shobindra's birthday. That's not how it is done. So to each stage of human beings, it has to be according to that, according to the seeking. Yes, to that extent, yes, one has to take into account. Maheshwari doesn't act blindly. That's why she has the wisdom. So, to each one. In each man, she answers and handles the different elements of his nature according to their need and their urge and the return they call for, puts on them the required pressure or leaves them to their cherished liberty to prosper in the ways of the ignorance or to perish. She acts in great freedom, doesn't compel anyone, because you have to grow. Evolution is through freedom. Someone asked Sri Aurobindo that, well, why do you allow so much freedom? In Sri Aurobindo ashram, even those four rules were made after people literally pestered mother. Some rules you give us. Then she made those four rules. But otherwise there was no rule. Sri Aurobindo just gave a general rule, that too, because people were so much asking him, something we have to give as a rule. So from one of his letters, he picked out and gave it as a rule. Live always as if you were under the eyes of the Divine Mother. Do nothing, try to think and feel nothing which would be contrary to the Divine Presence. That's it. That's the rule. There is no rule. Whether you eat meat, you don't eat meat, whether you are drinking, smoking. Drinking, smoking came later on. Otherwise, at one point of time, there was complete freedom. So somebody asked Sri Aurobindo that you have given so much freedom that somebody can hang himself, such a long rope that somebody can hang himself at the end of it. And then he says, but Superman cannot be created without that freedom. Superman is not somebody whom you can hammer into shape. You have to explore, allow. Error is the handmaid of truth. Often it opens the door to new possibilities. So Maheshwari acts like that. And to each one according to their nature. And that's why in this yoga there is nothing like forced conversion. Nothing like when you start doing in over enthusiasm. You have to keep in mind. So my first marriage anniversary, I gifted to my wife prayers and meditations of the mother. That is the only gift I gave. I said, this is the highest. Very nice of her that she accepted it graciously. Otherwise it would have been catastrophic. That's not what you give. On. And when you see the mother, how she would give to different people, different things, how she would do it. She knows what the person will value. So this is how she would give to each one. And then how she looks. For she is above all bound by nothing, attached to nothing in the universe. So we should not get attached to results. Oh no, I must give this so that the person may get converted. Sometimes in family people have this issue. Oh, I want my child to turn toward the mother. No, that's not how it is to be done. He has to go through his own evolutionary journey. The Gita puts it like that, Nabuddhi Vedam. Don't try to confuse those who are not the knowers forcibly into the knowers. People have to go through their evolution. It's after a great journey, we all have reached here. That's why when people say that, you don't have a big crowd in Sri Aurobindo, naturally, because it's an apex of the pyramid, the penultimate project. People have left lives behind to reach this point. Just can't suddenly pick up a big crowd and have a pandal and start saying, Mataji ka naam lo, sab theek ho jayega.
This sentence more deeply highlights karma and consequence.
Yes, absolutely. She will not.
The freedom is given.
Yes.
So you
have to make your choices. You can't escape from that. In chapter 1 also he says that you have to choose in freedom. Everywhere he says that the divine does not want you to be like an automaton. Then there is no evolution. Automatons may be perfect, serviceable and false. This is a word in line in Savitri. He doesn't want us to become automatons. He wants us to become conscious. So only difference is that in the traditional karma and consequences, it's seen at least as a reward and punishment. But karma is basically an evolutionary process. You learn and you grow. So she lets us learn and helps us to grow. It has been deliberately given. This is a very interesting question. Mother was asked. And Amal Kiran asked. He says, don't tell me philosophy, mother. I know all of it. Tell me yes or no. Mother became quiet for a moment. Then she says, You should take it that you have a free will. It has been deliberately left free. So, and proof is very simple. Supposing you tell somebody you don't have a free will, he will still make a choice. For everyday life, from morning, what time he'll wake up till the end, he'll still make a choice. You tell somebody that you have a free will. In either case, and if you do this, you will face these consequences. Man will still continue to make choices according to what his inner nature tells him. Nobody has ever stopped committing so-called sins. There is no concept of sin in Hinduism. Just because he has the fear of punishment, he will twist the meaning in his mind in such a way that the sin will appear to him as something great. So that's why you have to go through the consequences. The will has been left free. Now, this leaving free means it's a qualified statement. Means there is a point up to which you can go, but then it will boomerang. Or maybe you will exhaust it to a point, your asuric propensities, that you will suddenly become a bhakta of the Lord. This also happens. So many stories. So it is not simple reward and punishment. It's not a human system, it's a divine system. You take the example of Jagai and Madhai, Saint Augustine, who till his mid-30s, and Shobindu quotes his prayer. What does he pray to the Lord? Lord, grant me chastity, but not yet. That's his prayer. Because he knows he cannot control his impulses. And when he turns, gets converted, it's amazing. His prayers are one of the most beautiful psychic prayers. We have Mahishasur yesterday. Mahishasur at the end, what does he do? I think we are probably know. He surrenders to the mother. And so the mother stops. Just before she is going to finish him, she stops. And he becomes a devotee. That's why in all Durga Puja, you will see Mahishasur lying at the feet.
Yes, he asked for the boon.
He asked for the boon, exactly. Even to him she grants. So this is like, there is a point where you can't bypass the divine will using a free will. Let's put it like that. So it's always qualified. Ultimately, the divine will give you a vast scope. But in that scope, there is a point where there is the barrier of the divine will. It won't let you. So that there is a threshold. And that's how nature exercises it, by putting a magic circle. That's the circle of ignorance. In this ignorance, you do whatever you want to do. An elephant, is standing quietly and the Mahavat is sitting over it. If the elephant realizes that, you know what, I am so strong, life would change, but he won't. So this free will moves within the circle of ignorance, and the ignorance itself enlarges slowly until you realize that the only free will is the Lord's will. So it's a play through which you go. You start thinking it's your free will, but your will, free will is mulla ki daud, masjid se ghar tak. Then you realize that God is not stuck there, and you start enlarging. That's the Ish Upanishad saying, that you have to allow, he gets the consequence, then slowly he enlarges. That's why rebirth is there. Rebirth is precisely because evolutionary necessity. Otherwise, there is no need of rebirth if it's just a consequence of your reward and punishment. So all this has been planned by Maheshwari. You cannot go beyond a point. Otherwise, you cannot explain radical conversions of people who are apparently totally in, Girish Ghosh to Sri Ramakrishna Paramahans. And he says, all that you have to do is to take my name. He says, how can I go to women, I drink alcohol, but I like you. That is there. He says, it doesn't matter. When you are doing all these things, take my name, offer to me, give it to me. He says, okay, that's all I have to do. He says, yes. After 1 week, he says, this is not correct. Because he had a core of nobility and he knew it. That he is in drama and all this, so he has got habituated, but in his core he is a genuine man. See, Maheshwari sees all this in one go. That's why our human assessments and judgments don't count. in spiritual life, because we think, oh, this person, but the divine has brought him because he has seen something which we don't see. So this is where, yet has she more than any other the heart of the universal mother, for her compassion is endless and inexhaustible. All are to her eyes her children and portions of the one. So this compassion Sri Aurobindo speaks of with the mother so many times. One day she would say, Amal Kiran notes that when he came and said, Mother, for publishing Savitri, we have made some corrections. So mother said, what? You want to correct the Lord? And she shouted them, and literally, you know, they were shaken, taken aback, shaken completely. So they tried to say, Mother, but Sri Aurobindo had revised, but Book of Death he had not revised. How do you know that he didn't want to leave it as it is? See, he didn't want to revise. That's the end of the story. How do you know? Then they went away. Then after, she used even a big word, morons, trying to correct Sri Aurobindo. Then later on, Amal Kiran goes before the 72 edition has to come. He says, Mother, actually there were some, he explains, typo errors, because you know Sri Aurobindo was speaking, somebody was writing, typing out, so errors could creep that way. Basically, Mother, we want Sri Aurobindo is presented to the world, it should be perfect perfection, nobody should be able to point out a finger, just because the disciples who were typing and doing, they could be mistaken. Mother says, yes, yes, please go ahead. Totally change. So her dealings were like that, completely, and that's why nobody could fathom what is she really, because her heart was not acting on a format, standard format. Bansidharji recounts a story where once, while cleaning the bathroom, there were some bits of paper. She would work even in the bathroom. Now we have mobile. If she had a mobile, she would have been easy. But that time she would take up these small little chits and answer on that and keep it. So time was always short and she would do that. And one day, he while cleaning, he thought, oh, chits of papers. He took it. Mother gave him a good shouting. This is now not how unconsciously you have to do things. You have to be conscious, all that, she said. One day while cleaning, a little perfume bottle fell down, and a very exquisite French perfume bottle. And then he said, my God, aaj kya hone wala hai? That was only paper. And naturally mother came and she could smell. He said, what happened? Said this, okay, no problem. Be more conscious. End of the story. Because she looked at things very differently. There were such people who came who were Pakistani spy, who would come, and every time he would be before her, his soul would cry out. And she would keep. Sparrow, she tells, she is waiting before somebody is going into Sri Aurobindo's room. Seek compassion. And she tells, I want to tell you something. You are going to clean Sri Aurobindo's room. Be careful. There is a sparrow sitting on the door. She should not be disturbed. And Pooja Lalji had to do everything. Made sure that sparrow remains there. Sri Aurobindo, when he would sit, compassion, on the chair, and there is the cat sitting, she jumped and she said, you can't tell a cat this is Sri Aurobindo's chair. And because Sri Aurobindo is come, so nobody will dare to shoo away. So Sri Aurobindo comes and people are like, shall we remove now? Sri Aurobindo goes, smiles, quietly sits on the edge of the sofa, and the cat remains quietly sleeping. If you just read these stories, they are living examples of how we should be, where we fight for the chair. So that was the kind of compassion, where Sri Aurobindo says, at one point, that fakir who had thrown stones through black magic, and he says, what? Dying for a few stones? Because then it fell back upon him and he was on deathbed. Then his wife comes and requests that he realizes he shouldn't have done. Please, he is on the deathbed. And when this was told to Sri Aurobindo, that this is what has happened, He says, what, death for a few stones? Stones could never fall. That's a different story on all around because of the protection. They were materializing. And then he recovered. The death was. So there is the compassion where even the, so often when, even about the ashram setup, when people say, it doesn't matter, we can just, you know. So people say that, you know, why has Sri Aurobindo brought all these kinds of people? Sometimes, you know, many of us are not good examples to the world. I mean, there are different reasons, but let's not justify anything. Basic things, like when you are entering the gate, you expect a very courteous behavior at least, no? But sometimes even those things are missing. So I often tell people, don't see that, see their compassion. Who could keep all kinds of human samples? So in ashram you have all kinds of human samples. Those who would probably outside will be revered as yogis and saints, as well as those who are very difficult characters. And Sri Aurobindo said, if we wouldn't have accepted these people, the problem of this layer of humanity would have been left unsolved and they would have just collapsed. So see, he called people of all kinds. So that's the kind of compassion whom, you know, Chinmay was the name she gave to that Muslim girl from Hyderabad family, who would get the impulse to push mother down the stairs. That kind of hostile force had possessed her. And someone asked the mother, why are you keeping her? She said, if she goes out in the world, she will create havoc. And let her be near me. I'll keep this force in check. Her ways, so compassion. I'm glad questions are also naturally coming up, so you know we don't need to. And then of course Mahakali, and with Mahakali there is what does Mahakali like? Page 43. The impulses that are swift and straight and frank, the movements that are unreserved and absolute, the aspiration that mounts in flame, are the motion of Mahakali. And her way is very different. Maheshwari is compassionate, wideness, freedom. Mahakali will strike immediately the untimely slumberer. You can't be unconscious when you are working with the Lord. So sometimes, if ever we experience that sharp pain, she uses the word, with the prick of sharp pain, ill will is smitten at once by her scourge. Indifference, negligence and sloth in the divine work she cannot bear. And she smites awake at once with sharp pain, if need be, the untimely slumberer and the loiterer. So when this happens, grace of Mahakali. She is waking us up. Can't do divine work unconsciously, callously. So this is how she acts. Mahasaraswati will do it differently. She will make sure you keep on doing it. Mahakali will suddenly wake you up with a jolt. So one should be straight. The other day, I think Madan Gopalji were mentioning that, I don't know why I suddenly spoke up. That is Mahakali. In a meeting, let us say people are sitting and somebody is speaking nonsense, and you know people are, theek hai, okay. You know, people tolerate all. We are very tolerant people. But suddenly, you get up and say, but this is not how it should be. That is Mahakali. And that she loves, absolutely loves. Impulses that are straight and frank. Not like what the other person will feel, not feel. These are not her considerations. As Sri Aurobindo writes, she reckons not of virtue or of sin. He may be a good person, but still, I do the deed that is put into my heart. So these are the way to worship Mahakali, is to be straight and frank and swift in whatever work is to be done. If you give, give unreservedly. If you aspire, aspire till the last limit. Okay. But again, she is generally not allowed to intervene because very few can bear it. We know that once mother was scolding Amrita. He was a beautiful child of the mother. His story is fascinating. Amrita is smiling. Somebody said, "Amrit, you know what? Mother was scolding you." He says, "Yes, yes, that's why I was smiling." He said, "Why?" He says, "She thinks I am so much close to her. Have you seen her do this with anyone?" He says, "No." Because she knows that I'll never stop loving her. That's why she's doing it. And it is true that mother spoke about him as the first and last manager of the ashram. Because very rare. Mother says, "I don't use." Shivinder also said, "Don't use the Mahakali method because human beings cannot bear it." But she is loved by whom? By the noble. If her anger is, page 44, if her anger is dreadful to the hostile and vehemence of her pressure, painful to the weak and timid, she is loved and worshipped by the great, the strong and the noble, for they feel that her blows beat what is rebellious in their material into strength and perfect truth, hammer straight what is wry and perverse, and expel what is impure or defective. So this is her way. She does it and does it swiftly, but to bear it is not easy for human consciousness. You may suddenly, you know, you may be a very, what is called a Namcheen person. And suddenly you may feel that main toh badnaam ho gaya, because you are concealing something. She brings it out in the open. Very painful. Everything crashes. And that's how she changes us, purifies. But very few people she will go through. Like you see in action of Mahakali when Yudhishthir plays the game of dice. What nonsense are you doing? Okay. See, 13 years struggles. It's a purification. So this is how she acts. And then of course we have the most beautiful Mahalakshmi, the goddess of harmony and beauty and the hidden Ananda. And what does she like? How to worship her? Everybody turns to Mahalakshmi because she is full of charm. Most of the people, mother has used the Mahalakshmi way. She says that also. Maheshwari will be too distant. Suddenly, you know, she will speak. That's why her language also, "My child," she will smile, laugh. If she spoke like Maheshwari, people won't be able to understand. And she says that once to Nalnida, "You know, I could say philosophy. I have written it, but now I don't use that. And it was meant for him, so that he doesn't develop pride of being an intellectual, because his writings are of very high order." And then she would use the Mahalakshmi. That's why people kept, you know, out of that love, that spirit of beauty that manifests. Most of the time, if you see mother's action, it's Mahalakshmi. So she could draw even people who would fight with each other, they cannot see each other eye to eye, would be near her and sitting like a cow. They come out, they may become tiger and the deer. But because of that love. So she uses this and she throws the spell of the intoxicating sweetness of the divine. To be close to her is a profound happiness, and to feel her within the heart is to make existence a rapture and a marvel. Grace and charm and tenderness flow out from her like light from the sun, and wherever she fixes her wonderful gaze or lets fall the loveliness of her smile, the soul is seized and made captive and plunged into the depths of an unfathomable bliss. There's people who want to understand how she could make a soul captive by her love. There is a very beautiful book by Janina Stroka. Anyone has read it? It's literally titled A Captive of Her Love. She was a Polish lady, a nurse, who was caught up by, you know, during the, she helped many Jews, and she has seen that world war. And then she came to know, and she came to the mother, and then everything changed for her. 9 years only her life in the ashram, after which she left. But the way she progressed and her path of surrender, she would say that, I have understood now what yoga is. If I have a headache, I say, Mother, take my headache. If the servant has not come in the morning, I say, Mother, I have a servant problem. Her relation was just of that child who has complete trust. And she speaks about beautiful book, A Captive of Her Love. But something is required from our side to worship her. What flowers, what strotra, what puja. And yet it is not easy to meet the demand of this enchanting power or to keep her presence. What she likes is harmony and beauty of the mind and soul, starting from there. Harmony and beauty of the thoughts and feelings. Not like head is a bundle of contradictions. Harmony. Every thought should be in its right place. Harmony and beauty of every outward act and movement. Harmony and beauty of the life and surroundings. This is the demand of Mahalakshmi. Where there is affinity to the rhythms of the secret world bliss. See, even the business community has an affinity. You need to have the affinity. That's why this is called as business sense. You have the knack of where to invest in what. And a true businessman understands it. Just very recently I asked one diamond merchant, I said, so with all these tariffs, what's happening? Sabse jyada to aap log hit hue hoge. Bole, kuch nahi. I said, how? He said, we have started Mexico and other places. I said, it's going well. He said, yes. Immediately. They said, we don't send anything to America now. Already. This is hardly any time. I said, so is it going well? He said, yes, there is no problem. You have to know that. That's called a business knack. He's not cursing himself, are, kya ho gaya? That we may be thinking, are, but a true businessman will find a way out. So this is how affinity to the world rhythms. Response to the call of the all beautiful and concord and unity. So this is what she loves. She doesn't like quarrel and all that bitterness. And even in human love, she loves when there is sweetness, when there is joy and harmony. Otherwise she goes behind. But all that is ugly and mean and base, all that is poor and sordid and squalid, all that is brutal and coarse repels her advance. See, this is what mother says, that one of the things that the Asura managed to succeed in convincing Indians is that beauty is undivine. Even today when we go to a saint, etc., we are very happy. Oh, jhopdi mein rehte hain. Forgetting that Shri Krishna, Raj Rajeshwar, Yog Yogeshwar, drives the chariot and lives in Dwarka. We forgot that. Ram and Krishna, the two national icons. Yes, you should be able to stay in a hut if necessary. But to deliberately choose things which are, you know, as a sign of greatness of yoga, it's an asuric tapasya. Asuras engage like that. So it's so important that you can make your hut beautiful. Doesn't matter. It could be a hut. Few things. Earthen pot, keep it in the right place. A few creepers. That's how Shubhindo describes in Savitri, when Satyavan invites Savitri to his hermitage. How he describes? He says, I have wonderful companions. Morning I am woken up by the alarm clock of the birds. They chant the mantras and I wake up. And I have fresh air that comes. See, artistry, he says, and my wall changes color. Because as the sun rises and sets, the color on the wall changes. This is called beauty. Beauty is not about money. It's the sense of beauty. So that she likes. And at one point of time it was there in India. Unfortunately all this asceticism and Gandhivad and, you know, wear a langota and go out and take goat's milk. It has completely spoilt the spirit of beauty. So this is where he is. The mother and Shobindo is reminding us, if you don't respect beauty, then beauty, harmony will not come to you, because you'll keep fighting. So that respect for love for beauty and harmony. So all this is required. Because if they are not there, she goes back. Money also will not come. If you don't respect this casual slip shot, kya farak padta hai, kaam chalana hai. This is such a wrong mentality. So it's not what she likes. Where love and beauty are not, or are reluctant to be born, she does not come. Where they are mixed and disfigured with baser things, she turns soon to depart, or cares little to pour her riches. If she finds herself in men's hearts surrounded with selfishness and hatred, and jealousy and malignance, and envy and strife, if treachery and greed and ingratitude are mixed in the sacred chalice, if grossness of passion and unrefined desire degrade devotion in such hearts, the gracious and beautiful goddess will not linger. So we have to understand that this is how she works, and few lines below, which I think should be imprinted in the heart of modern day Indians who claim to be spiritual. Ascetic bareness and harshness are not pleasing to her. Nor the suppression of the heart's deeper emotions and the rigid repression of the souls and the life's parts of beauty. See, love and beauty are aspects of the divine. It doesn't mean buying a branded cloth, not at all. Whatever one has, the sense of harmony in colors and designs, even limited. If nothing else, in black and white, you can create beauty just by balancing things. In speech, beauty in speech, yesterday, that's what I was mentioning. People often say things going bad and human beings. I said, one thing I know, which is I am so grateful for whatever reason that has changed in India, in human beings, especially in the northern parts. And I feel so happy about it. I don't know whether many of us remember or not. Abusive words were a way of life. In all families. And it's such a relief. Now it has gone westward. To use so-called words, three letter and four letter, is they think it is cool. But in India, at one point of time, using these words was like, "Arey, ye to bolne ka tarika hai isko." I remember as a child, you should say, "Kya ye kaise bol rahe?" "Ye nahi, seriously nahi lena, ye bolne ka tarika hai." "Bolne ka tarika aapka acha bhi to ho sakta hai." Now we don't hear, for some reason. In much of humanity, it has gone, which is something very beautiful. Because then where will wealth come? Where will inner consciousness improve? Then at the end, you will only go to a Sadhu Baba who is living like an ascetic, sleeping on nails and all those kinds of things. Where is Shri Krishna of the Gita? So this is what, you know, she does not like this harshness. For it is through love and beauty that she lays on men the yoke of the divine. And finally, we'll just complete. Mahasaraswati, she is the youngest, she is the last, because she has to fill in the details. Everything that the three of them have missed out. Missed out means because it was not part of there. Now Mahasaraswati will come and give the masterly touch. You thought you are doing sadhana wonderfully well. Suddenly she will say, "Did you notice there is a little desire concealed somewhere? Oh my God, I thought." Okay, doesn't matter. Fill it. Okay. "You were thinking that I am freed from the ego. Do you know this is ego?" "Oh yes, mother. How could I? You were having this idea that by living in Sri Aurobindo Ashram, I am somebody special. Maybe, mother, you are right." You see how she told to Champak Lalji and Amrita. She says, "You know, you still have remnants of the Brahminical ego." And Champak Lalji says, "Really?" So he says, "It took me time to understand that yes, that little sense of superiority, Whereas a true knower of Brahman is humblest of humble, because he knows knowledge is infinite. He cannot be proud by its very nature. A true knower of Brahman will be, you know, even with a child, if truth comes, he will, like, you know, yesterday's story of Satyakam Jabali. So he says, yes, he realized. And see how she dealt with them. Champaklalji this way. And Amritda had to deal with all the workers. And the way he dealt, that he is the one person, when he left the body, almost everybody in the ashram, even the lowliest of the low, would came and wept for him. That love in his heart and that perfection, that little detail. So she will come and show Mahasaraswati, look here, you are congratulating yourself. You have written a very good book, and you have written you are doing a wonderful work at the center and looking after your self-glorifying weight. Even your name will be wiped away. She does that. She has her way. But whatever you have gained, you carry on. She will keep showing the smallest little thing, make us conscious to the details. So here Mahasaraswati, so all the science and art and craft, precise knowledge, subtlety, accuracy of intuitive mind and conscious hand and discerning eye of the perfect worker, nothing is missed out from Mahasaraswati. And so how should we worship her? One is that her action is laborious and minute, and often seems to her impatience slow and interminable, but it is persistent, integral and flawless. We are on page 52. For the will in her works is scrupulous. That's why those who are impatient and who don't know how to endure, they cannot go to the end in this yoga. Because the moment her working start, you feel, oh, I am the same stupid old fellow. No, you are not. You are becoming aware of the stupidities which you didn't know earlier. So she will show us. For the will in her works is scrupulous, unsleeping, indefatigable. Leaning over us, she notes and touches every little detail, finds out every minute defect, gap, twist or incompleteness, considers and weighs accurately all that has been done and all that remains still to be done hereafter. Nothing is too small or apparently trivial for her attention. Nothing, however impalpable or disguised or latent, can escape her. Sometimes I see this, even the other day on there in Pondicherry, on, let's say, Sri Aurobindo Society board, you know, somewhere. You see that one of the letter has been rubbed off, and it keeps on remaining ignored. That's not what Mahasaraswati would like. It may be a small little detail, because people can still read it. That's not the issue. It's our worship to the Divine Mother. It's not for people. It's for the Mother. When Mother walks, she should see the place wonderful. Right down to the smallest detail. Golkund has been made by that perfection. And Mani Ben, who was working there once, was sharing with me that she was a 15-year-old girl, and one day evening she says to Monada, the manager, I am going now, I have to go for whatever playground activity or something. Monada said, hold on, have you finished the whole thing that you have to do today? She says, almost everything is over, just a small little thing which I'll do tomorrow, Mother, Monada. She says, what if Mother comes right now? Finish it and go. See, a small thing, inconsequential thing. So everything, the way, you know, things have to be. So this is Mahasaraswati's puja. Saraswati puja is not Pushpanjali and finishing it. All that, you know, we sing a nice praise, hymn of praise. That's okay, but she also sees what we are doing. And so, in the end, he says, carelessness, page 53. Carelessness and negligence and indolence she abhors. This is another thing which we find so much missing. You give a work to a worker, he'll say, हो जाएगा, कब होगा, कल हो जाएगा, परसों, तरसों, एंड वी हैव सो टॉलरेंट, वी से ओके, दिस नॉट हाउ महा सरस्वती ऑपरेट्स. इफ यू हैव टू डू इट वेल एंड डू इट विद इन वॉट यू हैव एक्सेप्टेड. All scammed and hasty and shuffling work, all clumsiness and apoprey and misfire, all false adaptation and misuse of instruments and faculties, misuse of faculties also, human faculties, wasting intelligence in all kinds of discussions to start with, or life energy in all kinds of things. And leaving of things undone or half done is offensive and foreign to her temper. So that's why when she finishes everything, at the same time she is, because she is so patient, she is extremely kind. If you find somebody kind, must know he is very patient. Only patient people can be kind. Otherwise one is, oh, this fellow, give up. So he describes her as kind, she is long-suffering with man and his thousand imperfections, kind, smiling, close and helpful, not easily turned away or discouraged, insistent even after repeated failure, her hand sustains our every step on condition that we are single in our will, and straightforward and sincere. We should just want that, okay, we have problems and defects, we are willing to correct and improve. That's all that she requires. For a double mind she will not tolerate, and her revealing irony is merciless to drama and histrionics and self-deceit and pretense. And the last sentence we'll read before we close. A mother to her want, she knows the smallest needs when she takes care. Everything she takes care. Not only spiritual needs, most material needs. Things which we have also not thought about, she will take care. Because she is like that. Every detail of life. A mother to her wants, a friend in our difficulties, a persistent and tranquil counselor and mentor. Not giving up, given up. Persistent, because she is infinite patience. Chasing away with a radiant smile the clouds of gloom and fretfulness and depression. Why her smile is so powerful? Because she is so patient and long-suffering. She knows, ant mein vijay to bhagwan ki honi hai. She knows this is the process towards perfection. So if you go to Maha Saraswati, this happening, that will happen, she smiles. Everything will be all right. Because she knows it. She has seen empires rise and fall. And all the little details she knows. So that's why she is, her smile is what it is. Pointing to the eternal sunshine, she is firm, quiet and persevering in the deep and continuous urge that drives us toward the integrality of the higher nature. So if you go and ask Mahasaraswati, she is also a counselor, and Maheshwari will point the way. Okay, you go that way, practice this meditation, you will arrive. Mahasaraswati will, you know what, probably you are eating a little too much. That's why you are unable to meditate. She will start with small little detail. Probably you are sitting with people when you are doing this. Yes, mother. Small little details she will instruct. And then, if you go and say, mother, I am feeling very sad, what she will do? She will point toward the sunshine. See? I am there, no? Sherbindo is there? Why you are sad? And suddenly you will realize, are I? Why was I seeing the clouds? Clouds will come and go. But the sunshine of the Lord is always there. These are the four aspects. Time has no boundaries. So we can stop, or 10 minutes if you want something else, I'm fine. We can just take another 15-20 minutes and just complete.
We can continue with the questions.
If there is a question or something, we can just take it. नहीं ब्रेक तो फिर अब क्या ब्रेक, अब तो फ्लो. यस दैट बी मच बेटर.
लास्ट एस्पेक्ट व्हिच यू जस्ट ड्वेल्ड अपॉन इन द यू कैन से इन द कॉर्पोरेट और इन द मटेरियल वर्ल्ड परफेक्शन इन टुडेज टाइम इज लुक डाउन अपॉन. यू नो पीपल वुड से दैट यू मे मेक You may take 20 decisions, one or two may go wrong, no problem, but just move forward. So how does it reconcile with what we have just covered?
It is collapsing. Just wait and watch. This will not go for long. See, if you see the industrial revolution following which the corporate make money came up. How many years? Maybe few decades? Look at the life of civilizations, few decades, this tendency. And then it gripped the whole world like a fever. Rush, gold rush, literally like that. Then after some time you realize that there will be no buyers left to buy your product. So came CSR, backdoor entry of you have a responsibility, otherwise you will have the atelier built in Mumbai and all around you will say this is looking very ugly simply because it, every around there will be no people. So you have to come together. This is what at least this level we have reached. Now because people are realizing we were pushing the people who were working to a point where early death started. So it started that no, some facilities, you have gym, you have breaks. Then started lectures. Many Babajis made money out of teaching the corporate world how to relax, how to be better. So you see, within few decades, you see the change has begun to come. And that's where India should take the lead. Teach what is the new way. And what should be the new way? We have Ayut Puja, we have Vishwakarma, we have the background. But we do the puja and forget. From India, the message will go should go that it's not for the man or the money I am doing it. I am doing it as my worship to the Divine Mother. You'll do the work very well. It will take the work to the next level. There's that little story of somebody who lost a suitcase key, and in the ashram there was a department, and he still there is. But nobody knows, it's not as a department now. Where the person went, he asked what to do. He said, no, there is a department in the ashram, they will make the key for you. So he went there and he made the key and made it with such a perfection. Then he said, okay, thank you so much. No, wait. I have to make a duplicate. He said, I don't need it. He said, it's not for you. Mother has instructed that you should make duplicate. What if he loses again? So this thought has gone. And he's sitting waiting. He says, okay. Now I can't, and it's not for money. This aspect, we have done enough Vishwakarma Puja and Ayut Puja. Very frankly, it's okay, fine. Those who still want to just do that momentarily is absolutely fine. But imagine if you do that puja, but your equipment is not really kept ready and up to date. That's where we have to understand its worship. It's service to the Divine Mother. And some have to lead the way. Centers are places to show the way. That we are not doing for money, we are not doing for position, we are doing it as our service to the Divine Mother. It will contaminate the mind that, well, people can. And actually, many of these communes have come up like this. In India, at least, the experiment of the commune which is going on is something very beautiful. People are not noticing it, but you go to any ashram or, you know, places, any place. They do with a lot of love. They give money, not because you are going to get return or things like that. And if you ask why are you doing it, the motive ultimately is something connected to the guru or the divine it for him. This is the message India has to show to the world, that take the game to the next level. It will come. It's already in certain sense begun to come. Some corporate sectors are beginning to somewhere admit this possibility of, you know, something greater, something nobler. But India should lead the way. So what people are doing, we shouldn't worry. Because they are going the doomsday path. Let's be very clear. This is not sustainable. This is one of the things. How is sustainability of environment coming up? A typical corporate will not bother. He's not interested in sustainability. He wants money. But now this sustainability, because it's a long-term thinking that, well, it's not good for the environment, it's not good for... So this is already come. Nature is forcing us, or the supramental is forcing us in ways and means that we are compelled to admit. And just less than 100 years. So don't go that way. Wherever, whichever company is up for making quick money and giving you quick money, stay away. It's not worth... encouraging that. Yes.
I remember where somewhere the mother had said, you know, a time will come where there will be this divide or a fissure where humanity, which is through evolution,
yes, yes,
versus humanity, which chooses to remain where it is. In the next few decades, how do you see that playing out?
Because yes.
At least in my observation, 95% of the people, starting from the lowest to the villages to the cities, the way they live in their expression, forgetting whatever religious background or XYZ they might be from, they're completely under the spell of the Asura. Be it cleanliness, be it ethics.
Absolutely.
From the poorest to the rich, the villages to the cities, it's across the board. So if 90% of humanity, hypothetically speaking, is going to choose how does the 5%?
Yes, so this she has said, first the Bhavishyavani, what exactly she has said. She has said it is what is actually was meant by last judgment or in our conception of pralaya. So pralaya won't be there of that large scale, but she says there are three layers of humanity. One is which is ready to do whatever it takes for the new creation. Go through any suffering, go through any difficulty, challenges. This is the humanity which is being made ready to be integrated with the new creation. Then there is another layer of humanity which is intellectually engaged and interested, but not willing to make, you know, that. Like, it's one thing to know about the new creation, all that, but quite another to say that, okay, I'm ready to do anything for the sake of, you know, I'm ready to tear desire, for example, subordinate the ego completely. So, but they are intellectual disciples of Sri Aurobindo, and she says that that will be taken up into the higher humanity because that will create the link between the animal and the new creation. So they will become like a tire to go towards that. So there will be a humanity very harmonious, very beautiful. Many of the things which you are saying should be there, would be there in that humanity. And the rest of humanity, which is like an aborted and perverted attempt. Among the rest, there are two types. One is which is a perverted attempt at becoming human, will collapse, will be destroyed. And then there will be one layer which is like animal, and you know, just eat, drink, be merry. And they are not bad, they are not good, they are not asuric, but they are just what they are, you know. So that will be integrated with the animal life. So they have a door opening for evolution, but in a very long, tortuous way. So this is what she has said very clearly in 2013, one of my casual passing talks I had mentioned about this future which is imminent, when the choice will be, definitive choice will be given. Then 2014, of course, in India, government changed. Then 2020, Corona struck, and now there is a rapid geopolitical shift. This is going to become more and more intense. And already now people are having forecast. For example, world population. See, one of the things, this is going to start going down after 2070. You will see drastic reduction. Simply because fertility rate will go down. You don't have to do anything. So you will see a drastic reduction in world population going down to 1/6. So a lot of things which today we are having, problem of resources, problem of, you know, all this will be solved in a very different way. Simply because many more people will die, even a natural death they will die, but very few will come. So what happens to these souls? That's where I feel integration with the animal kind and collapse is taking place. Because technically then what happens to rebirth? What happened to these souls? So they are being sent back. Outwardly, nature will reduce the fertility rate. Europe, India, everywhere, including including Muslims, fertility rate is coming down. Nature has always plans ready. So don't go by the actual outer data. It will increase till 2065. Till then, still population will increase. Then this is now almost certain, like well-known prediction by the scientists, not by. So a lot of problems are going to be solved by virtue of that. Many things which we do today because so that is going to be taken away. The number of youth is going to in India we still have, but it's going to shrink. So nature is going to find the way, and it need not be through magical catastrophic of pralayas. It will be done in a way, because that's how supermind acts. Supermind is not going to jim jim barish and you know pura Delhi NCR dub gaya. Those things continue. They are part of the nature's response to the supramental pressure. But it will happen in ways that are very natural, like pornography addiction. I am taking this one example. People often. Now what happened is there was a phase when pornography was like peak, and it started with Bollywood cinema and photographs, women as a pleasure object, this came. Now you see what has happened. People have either got fed up, sunk, I'm talking of number of people, and at the same time what has happened, actually importance has increased. World statistics I'm telling. In Europe it's a big problem. So simply because you have finished an energy which now is, you know, nothing is available. So it's like you have thrown away all your money and now nothing is left to do anything. And of course there are government is taking cognizance, now people are becoming aware, educational awareness, all that is there. But nature will find ways which are beyond our, comprehension. So when the demand goes away, the supply chain is cut off. So this is how many more things, I'm just giving a hint. So the next 50 years, this choice is going to become more and more imperative. And I foresee it's reaching its ultimate acme in 2067. Because in 1967, he gave this men, countries, continents, the choice is imperative, two-third of the abyss. So when the divine utters something, 100 years you have to grant. So 100 years, 2067. So the process will become more and more intense. By then, whatever geopolitical shifts have taken, then there will be sudden pulling of strings, where you will see the collapse of empires, whatever now we are beginning to talk about de-dollarization, shift of the Shakti, all that we will see definitively. Not immediately, 10, 20 years, we will just see the tunings of the master musician setting the tabla, setting the harmonium. Music will increase after 47. By 67, you'll see a very, very definite picture, which even the blind will be able to see. Even I can sort of make a prediction about what happens with the intuitive, how intuition will awake. Because it's not like people will teach courses. That's not how evolution takes place. Hey, look here, come, I'll teach you how to grow in intuition. So AI and many more things are going to come up. So what happens with the coming of AI? Lot of humanity will lose its basic mental faculties, basic reasoning. So that is going to happen, and whatever its consequences are. But there will be a humanity which will automatically, because see now reason is, you don't need many of these things. But this is a humanity which has an aspiration. This is a humanity which will start opening to intuition. It will start striking human minds. You will see groups where people begin to automatically, intuitively connect with each other, even understand the thought of people intuitively. Thought-driven machines will come into existence. All this nature has made ready, waiting just to express. Because this is the next level of evolution, or whatever we may call it as the cutting-edge divine technology. So SI and DI is going to increase because consciousness will increase and intuition will start automatically. People will realize. Nowadays many youngsters say, oh, I was feeling like that. Oh, I thought like that. This will automatically become more and more common in science and in writing, in artwork and all these things, and then in administration people are will begin to take intuitive decisions. This is also started. There are people, I mean, the other day I was watching the interview of one of our Prime Minister, present Prime Minister Modi ji, and he says, how do you take this? He says, I myself don't know. Very honest admission. He says, I am just wondering, and then suddenly something emerges. He says, I don't know. It's not a rational calculation. So there is that awakening which will happen more and more frequently. In businesses you will see. Right now we don't use the word intuition, but it has actually started creeping in. Relationship. People talk about, you know, pehle kya hota tha, kundalini aur ye sab. Abhi wo seedha baat karte ki soulmate. I feel like gel. They are using terminology which betray a deeper truth. Unko bolo bhai, gel kahan se kar rahe ho, ki isme kaun sa gel hai? But they understand their language. They don't care if you understand or you don't understand. So this has begun. There will be errors, because that is how a new faculty, when it awakens, it is prone to error. And then slowly it will become more generalized. And people laugh at the old way. Healing. You will see beautiful new discoveries. And 50 years down the line, when we look back to our present medical science, we'll use only one word, barbarians. We learn to heal purely by light, by sound. Sound has come in, light has started. That light could heal, and we were doing complicated surgeries. Right now we don't have the technology, but this technology will come. That you can direct light and open up the vessels, right frequency, pulsations, clear the vessels. Also, money is a very big lobby, but all this is going to come. So plenty of beautiful things I foresee in the future. And yes, lot of collapse, great geopolitical shifts. Asia will become the power next, because Shakti has shifted, Divine Mother has shifted from Europe to India. So Europe will sink, literally it will sink. America's fate, I don't know. These people are not yet understanding. Mother said they are still taking sides with the adverse forces when she saw that they are supporting Pakistan. But then she wanted that give them a chance. They are relatively new. And China, Tibet will be free, and that will become a more quieter China. Probably it will turn inside. It will implode in two ways. One, it will implode economically, and it will implode, turn within, because China has a background. It can implode and go inside and bring out its true strength. That will happen. So rise of Asia, the nations, a lot of turmoil in the process, but it's inevitable. So if you ask me. Yeah, you were saying something.
Today we talked about the qualities of the mother, the four aspects.
Yes.
And we briefly touched on the aspect of free will, and we have to somewhere exercise our choice. But then if we see our scriptures, you will come across things like Prarabdha, Sanchitta, how do we reconcile free will with something like fate,
yes,
destiny, astrology? How?
Yes, so we can look at it very simply. Firstly, about the scriptures, let me start from there, because there are many angles to it. See, it depends on how we read it. So, you have the three karmas, prarabdha, sanchit and the utkat. So, prarabdha is what you have, you know, done, you have to bhogo in this life. Prarabdha is that the soul selects, I am going to take care of this baggage. We may use the word baggage, but I use the word incomplete evolutionary curves. Let's put it like that, that somebody always thought, had the greed for money, tried his hand, all that, but nothing happened. Now this becomes his prarabdha. It's become his sanchit karma, energy which has just remained, but he may choose in the next life or next to next life, let me take it as a prarabdha. Now with less effort he gets money, maybe born in a So what is happening behind it? Divine says, okay, you have the experience of playing with money. Then he realizes it's foolishness to chase money. So he grows. So from the Sanchit, Sanchit is all the accumulated energy store, and suddenly it's not the way it's put mathematically. Actually, nobody has said mathematically. People have created 100 rupees, you did that, everything. It's not a mathematical law. It's about the main lines along which the soul wanted to move. So they go into Sanchit, and Prarabdha is in one life which you have to take. Then there is Utkat. Utkat is something which you just can't escape. Meaning thereby, the moment you say Utkat karma, which is only two, murder, and murder is not about the soldier, but consciously killing somebody with the will to injure and harm, to take advantage, and suicide. They are regarded as Utkat karma. So the moment you say Utkat karma is non-negotiable, matlab you have to go through, meaning thereby there is negotiability in the other karmas. How is that negotiability there? It's there in the form of Purusharth. So supposing I take the Prarabdha out of that, out of my Sanchit Prarabdha, I want to be a rich man. I have not finished the experience of richness. And as you are moving and money is beginning to come, there are several stories about that, indicating that, but just to make it short. So I start thinking I am getting money. How about if I start sharing it? Now what has happened? I have taken a different curve altogether with that Prarabdha. So I can, by Purusharth, change that karma instead of reward and punishment into a conscious learning process, which is what karma is originally meant to be, and compress my learning. So there is the Purusharth. After all, if I am the creator of my destiny, then it implies that by default, I can also have, there is a mechanism by which I can at least mitigate my destiny. So this is how the traditional theory operates. But even in the traditional theory, there are two caveats. So one caveat is Karuna. So the divine, by his Karuna, can mitigate the karma. By mitigate is meant that you will go through it, but you won't feel the pain so much. I mean, he will support you from inside, and all the yogis say that, you know, antar hath sahar de bahar mare chot. So what does the guru do? He doesn't cancel the karma. He helps you go through it, so you don't feel its edge. And beyond it, that's something Shurvindu and the mother say. That's not said in such a way. They say there is grace. And both of them have confirmed that grace can completely cancel karma, even the Utkat karma. Now on what basis? The basis is that the law of karma was right from the origin meant to facilitate your evolutionary journey. So you learn by experience. But what does the grace do? Grace not only removes that part, but puts in the learning that is required, provided you surrender. Mother says that all that is required is that conscious surrender, aspiration, and most importantly, some awareness of where things went wrong or are going wrong. Some awareness. And that's enough for the grace to act. It's hinted even in the Gita when Shri Krishna says, Sarva dharman parityaja mamekam sharanam raja aham tva sarva papebhyo mokshishami ma sucha. How can he say that with that authority unless there is this capacity of the grace to completely annul karma? Because Arjun has a backlog, and that backlog means I'll deliver you from all fear and sin and evil, do not grieve. So there is this highest, which is grace. So now we can have a connection with Ohi and Sohi jo Ram Rachi Rakha. Now all this Ohi and Sohi, which is now inbuilt in the programming of the evolutionary journey. So what has Ram Rachi Rakha is not like tera accident hoga, Ram ji ne. Now that's taking it crudely. That's where the problem lies. So ordinarily human beings are going through their ego and the normal consequences of the karma. So when we say Hoi and Sohi jo Ram Rachi Rakha, means to have Kalyan Shraddha, that everything through all this evil, good will come out at the end. Because that is what Ram ne Rach Rakha hai. Rama never made his own life simple. Nor was the life of his devotees simple. So Ram Rachi Rakha never meant that life will be simple. But at the end, Rama is victorious. At the end, Sita is glorious despite going into the earth. At the end, all those who were beaten by the Rakshasa and the Asura find their names in the, you know, register of immortality. That's what is meant by Ram Rachi Rakha, that there is an imperative. Shobindu used the word supramental. There is an imperative will, divine will buried in creation. And you have a scope within the human will range of doing things. But there will come a point you cannot go past that divine will, because it will fulfill itself by whatever means. So we see in the story of Shishupal, these are in so many other stories. Okay, 99 times he is saying, then there comes a time when he has to be, you know, removed. Now, what is interesting is why Shishupal is being removed. That is also interesting. The will could have been stopped at 95. But Sri Krishna allows, look at the beauty of the story. When Arjun and all these people, this is my problem. Why does he allow? It was important to remove Shishupal out of the picture. See, this is the larger picture. In Mahabharata actual war, the Chedi army, which was a great big army, joined the Pandavas. Not the Kauravas. That was Shishupal, Chedi Naresh. Magadhan army, another very huge army which was capable of building an empire, was Jarasandha's army. They again joined the Pandavas. And why they joined is also very interesting. See, Sri Krishna had seen all these steps in front. They joined the Pandavas because they wanted a strong center. They didn't want to join because of great dharma and all that. Whereas those who were very weak, they wanted a weak king in the center so that they can continue with all their chori chakari of whatever in that their kingdoms, and they are not threatened, because if there is a weak king, he will never try to make an empire. We will, chor chor masare bhai. This is what Sri Krishna foresaw. See, he allows Shishupal continue, and then he finishes him. Then Jarasandha goes along with Bhima and Arjun. Now he plays the game in such a way. Now here Ram Rachi Rakha comes. He tells, whichever you choose. Now people have asked this question. What if Jarasandha chose Arjun for a combat? Only Bhima, Karna, Dronacharya, Bhishma, they were four or five people, Duryodhan, who could have beaten Jarasandha, not Arjun. So there comes this. Oh, he has so he jo Ram Rachi Rakha. He tells him, you have a choice. But see, Krishna has already directed his choice. How? Through his own ego. It is below the dignity of Jarasandha, who is projecting himself as a wannabe emperor, to fight with Arjun. He knows that Arjun will be easily beaten. So for his ego, he says, this fellow I will choose. He is also blessed by the Vardhan. So you see, there is a pushing of forces from behind in this complex play, where karma or no karma or everything, you will be ultimately pushed to fulfill the divine will. And another classic example with which we can end this part of the question is Trojan War. Trojan War, something similar happens. Like here Arjun is saying, I want to leave the war and go. But Arjun is in Bhartiya, Hindu. So he says, mere man mein sab ke liye moh ho gaya hai, and I won't fight, I'll take sannyas, because he is Indian idea. In the Trojan War, Achilles says, I won't fight. They were banking on Achilles. Achilles says, I won't fight. Why? Because his girlfriend has been taken away by the king. And he says, either you give her back to me, otherwise I won't fight. Now what a silly thing. Not only that, he offers a treaty with Troy. He says, your daughter, you just send her to me, I'll marry her, and I will stand by your side. And if Achilles switches the side, all these fellows will go away. He is a killing machine. And then he asks his daughter, Priam, do you want? She says, no. And he says, done, no. And then he comes to the war through the back door. Why? Because Ram Rachi Rakha. He tries to escape, but situations, circumstances are created which are beyond your control. That's why there is always two things. If you read the Gita, it's very interesting. There is the karma and its consequences, which are largely inner. In the Gita, if you read, if you do tamasic karma, you become more and more mood. Rajasic karma, you go through pleasure and pain. And sattvic karma, it increases sukham, the state of gladness. But there is something called as bhagya, circumstances. So circumstances ऐसे हो जाते हैं एचलिस के लिए कि उसका भतीजा जिसको प्यार करता है उसको मार देता है हेक्टर. Thinking he is एचलिस. And when he comes to know that my 16-year-old nephew has been killed brutally by Hector. Hector is a noble person. He didn't kill him. He thought it is Achilles because he had stolen Achilles' armor and everything. So he thought, and he feels sorry that he fought a, you know, 16-year-old. Then Achilles jumps and then the whole war changes. So that's where these circumstances and situations come in, which are not the creation of, you know, my bhagya doesn't make a truck driver come from that side and took me. Bhagya will decide I'll go through this pain and grow through this pain. But that's my, like karma. But the bhagya decides which way and from which side the pain may come, may not come. Or it may just touch me a little. That same truck which was going to smash me because I was in a state of Ram, 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 like, you know, Markande. It comes, because that's how it is destined, it comes, touches and goes away and everybody is saved. So that's where we have to understand the play, divine play. Yes.
Professor, I wanted to ask you, number of schools of yoga, there's a lot of emphasis given on the awakening and of various chakras. Muladhara, Swadhisthana. And our yoga basically starts where other ends. So what is the role of these chakras?
Yes. Yes. So if you go, see, nowadays chakras are in fashion, first of all. And it started in sometimes in the 70s, very big way, because of various reasons. I'll not go into that. It's not relevant to the discussion. Now everywhere there is chakra awakening. Authentic Kundalini Yoga is a very rare thing. You know, everybody's chakra getting awakened. It can be very, pretty dangerous. Now, what happens in our yoga, chakras open. They have to open because they will be, they are the fullest potential of a human being. But they open from above downwards. So, it's the Urdhva Kundalini. So, how the Divine Mother does, so what really is chakra? Let's start from there. Chakra is simply cosmic energy tying in a knot and becoming individual. Why? Because we cannot handle. It's like in the house when the current is coming from the main electrical station, you have those MCP. So, they will provide you electricity only the amount your system can handle. Otherwise, geyser will blow up, everything will blow up. So, chakra is that. It's not magic, it's nature's way of. Now, why they don't open fully? Because our needs are very little. We want only roti, kapda, makan, utani energy aayegi. Then, if we want like people like, you know, Alexander or Napoleon, of course their chakras were open. They didn't use the word. You can't become a vibhuti of the divine without the onrush of that divine energy. So, nature does that all the time. Now, yoga is what? The same process when you activate, do it methodically, then it becomes yoga. So, you have a man like Napoleon, you have, there are people who hardly eat but, you know, achieve so much because now nature uses them, like many of the vibhutis. So, nature does spontaneously. Now, in our yoga, now imagine if the chakra opens and there is no purification of nature. So we have to read that book by Pandit Gopi Krishna. He had also written to Sri Aurobindo. And Sri Aurobindo says, I cannot undertake guiding you because you have followed a different path. But he totally got imbalanced. Because when the lower chakra opens, your sexual appetites, your physical appetites, all this will increase abnormally. You become an asura actually. So people are going into all this left, right and center and anybody awakens, most of the time mother says 99% just some vital force that energizes them. Because if 1%, if the real awakening comes, they will collapse. And Pandit Gopi Krishna describes that he went into depression, such tremendous energy pushing him, then going into depression, collapsing back. So during that phase, he had also written to Sri Aurobindo. And so this is one part, and it's dangerous. So in this yoga, it's not done. Chakra awakening, if at all one wants to follow the Kundalini yoga, should be done only by a proper master who is a Tantra Siddha, who can teach you all the purification. He will not do like this, the way, you know, America and everywhere you have pay the dollar, enroll, change your name, and certainly he will not do like that. It's a rare event and it's done in very sacred schools. In this yoga also you need that tremendous energy in the mind, heart, everywhere. So what the mother does, she opens in a nature's way, she will open that chakra which is ready. Let's say in most of the people, because they are mind-centered. So mind begins to expand, and knowledge, new understanding in a very natural way, so that it doesn't get imbalanced. Because suddenly if you rise to a point where the mind says there is no good, there is no bad, measures will, you know, fall away, because they are meant to fall away. So slowly she makes the mind expand without upsetting anything. Then the heart or the throat chakra. So that's where we have the golden light came down into my mind, thy golden light came down into my throat. So then speech and, you know, word begins to change. Then the heart, love. Suddenly one didn't understand bhakti, and bhakti blossoms, and love for universal love begins to enter. And then into the lower life parts, where ambition changes into service of divine. So first the motive changes. When the motive changes, the chakra is opened wide. So it happens in this yoga also. It's described in Savitri from above downwards. And then in the physical body also the change begins. The chakra opens. Now you see, it's very interesting. The method of opening chakra in a typical Kundalini yoga, they always spoke about Brahmacharya, not in Vedantic yoga. Vedantic yoga doesn't speak about that. It's not really needed. Why? Because they started awakening the divine energy which is concealed in matter. So if you really look at it, how the transformation of sexual energy takes place, you see, it just creation in reverse. Creation starts with Akash, spatial element. Then it modifies itself. There is no new element which comes in. Panchabhut doesn't mean five different elements. From the same element. So Akashya modifies and becomes aerial, where you have the play of these electrical, all that, you know, that happens. And then that electrical energy which is there in air as a principle, it changes into the heat and light, which is the Agni, Agni Tattva. And then it goes still down, becomes water, jala, and then it becomes matter. Now what happens with Brahmacharya? Energy concealed in matter, where this energy which has come ultimately takes the seed of life, which is how reproduction takes place. It's a very interesting science. Now this seed of life, when you conserve the material part, conserving is not enough, because mind will get filled with filthy thoughts. But transmuting it by aspiration. When you conserve and aspire, or sublimate at least, if not aspiration, then it changes first into the jala element. So a lot of attractions, all the jala element begins. Conserve it, it changes into tejas, the heat element. So, you know, the eyesight, all these things, you know, because simply because sight has to do with Agni Tattva. Conserve it still further. So the electrical energies, the intuitive mind begins to form. Conserve it still further, it becomes the original space, the original substance. That original substance starts with that ether. So it changes into Virius, which is pure spiritual energy which can create matter. And so it's very fascinating. Now nobody practices Kundalini yoga. You cannot practice without Brahmacharya. And that's why Sri Aurobindo says about his yoga, while many realizations like the self and finding the soul do not require such a strict mastery of the sexual energy. Of course, one cannot be just throwing it about like an animal and go into yoga. But ek sanyam basic hona chahiye. But for physical transformation, he says, complete sexual mastery and abstinence is a must. Because see, the original substance gets linked here. So here it opens, at the end it enters and the physical transformation starts. That's when, if there is no mastery over the sexual impulse, that's when it will dig out and bring out some of these tendencies which are hidden. Because human mind puts them behind, it'll dig out. And that's a difficult phase of the sadhana. Sri Aurobindo says that you need really the presence of the master. Now presence, of course, not just physical presence. You have to literally be with Namcha, because ma, because that energy cannot be handled. And then finally, once it is handled, which it is inevitably, patience, endurance, faith, then the physical transformation begins. So in this yoga also there is kundalini opening, but from above downwards. And not systematically, from step by step. If the heart is more open, mother will open the heart, because she is not bound by any rule or formula. But it's at the end, and only in the instrumental nature. It has been known in tradition, why Vedantins don't follow it. You don't need kundalini for mukti. So if you read traditional Vedantic literature, they will say those who practice kundalini yoga, even Kabir sayings etc. are there. That what do they achieve? They don't achieve mukti, they don't achieve the highest realization. They say like that, they get powers. You can get the highest if you persist and go right up to the world mother, Jagan Mata, and then she can open the door.
The moment kundalini opens, you get moksha.
No, it cannot be. That's even the Vedantic yogis, traditional yogis laugh at kundalini. They say that it is in the lower realm. Which is true, because it's dealing with nature. You are entering into cosmic consciousness, not the transcendent. So Vedanta starts from the mind. He says, let's work it out for your mukti. What is ever happening is nature, don't care about it. Start with the mind, thought, meditate upon the idea, mantra, and out. But in this yoga, but kundalini yoga, because the tantra, and even in certain forms of hatha yoga, it was integrated. But the tantra says that we want to enjoy nature and go. She is also the divine mother. That's how they started, where they fell also. In this yoga, you have to bring in kundalini, because for the simple reason that it's a working on the field of nature. And if nature remains limited, how is it going to handle that tremendous supramental consciousness? So it is there in the yoga, but it comes toward the end when the transformation of nature is proceeding. By then, one is already liberated. So it begins where the other yogas end. Yeah. Okay, so I think we can... Thank you so much.